Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 88th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. And we just want to encourage you guys to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars this evening as we go through the interview. We love seeing the conversations and hearing about things that stick out to you.
And we are really excited about this week's guest. We have Jared Wassler, who's a high school assistant principal in Littlestown, Pennsylvania. He is the co-founder of the Maryland EdChat and was the Maryland Assistant Principal of the Year in 2014. He is also listed as one of ASCD's Emerging Leader Class of 2014. So, Jared, thanks for coming on with us today.
That's me.
Well, Jared, we always like to start with hearing a little bit about you and kind of how did you end up in education?
I kind of took a backdoor channel, and I also want to thank you guys for having me, and I'm going to explain our little difficulty. We were having some fun on my end with audio, only on my end, so I hear choppiness. So if I say something wrong or answer the wrong question, it's completely my inability to listen. But I kind of got in as a career changer. I wanted to be an educator when I was in middle school. I had a band director who really got me into music education, and I really wanted to do what he did. And as I got closer to high school, I had some hard conversations with my parents, and God bless them in some ways, but they also pointed out education doesn't really pay. It's not really the place, you know, you have a lot of other things. And it just so happened I liked science and math, and I was able to get into a program that accepts 25 promising high school juniors from around the country to one campus a summer. And you do engineering research with high-level engineering firms, and also with you take your freshman-level college classes. So once I started that program, I was like, all right, engineering's for me. And to be honest, I got bored. I did engineering for about 2 years in two years up to college and a year in college, and it just was the same thing every day, and something didn't feel right. So halfway through my freshman year, I decided I needed a change, and I decided to try the music ed track. And so my parents signed on and said, go for it. It's really where your heart is. Do it. So I went into music ed. I actually had an illness that caused me to lose part of my hearing. And so I wasn't able to do the music piece as much anymore, so I had to find a new avenue. So I actually got a degree in government and politics, worked on two presidential campaigns, loved working in politics, and I went to my first real job as a defense contractor, and again, it just didn't feel right. And so I got very fortunate. Someone I had worked with as an assistant band director said, I have an opening at my school for someone who wants to teach social studies one mod a day, be a hall monitor two mods a day, and be my assistant the other mod. So I had three jobs in one. And once I got into that, I never looked back. I went and did the alternative certification route and started teaching and decided a long time ago that administration was probably the way I really wanted to go. I actually got – this is my favorite story. I tell my kids they're not allowed to tell, so I'm going to tell it on the internet. I actually got suspended from high school with 12 days left in my senior year, the first time I was ever suspended. I was trying to teach someone science, and they used it for bad, and my name got linked, and so I got a 10-day suspension. And the principal called me in and said, I have two things I can do. I can recommend expulsion, or I can take your National Honor Society cord off your neck. And he knew for me, I could care less about expulsion because I was willing to fight anything. But that Honor Society cord meant a lot to me. So he ripped it off my neck and said, you're going to walk across stage without it. And it was probably the best thing someone ever did to me because it gave me the reality check. There are consequences even when you might not be the necessary guilty party. But the fact that he gave me that chance to go back and redeem myself and not throw the book at me made me understand the role of an administrator is not to be a disciplinarian. It's to really help people. And so he really is the spark for why I wanted to get into administration. He gave me a second chance when he didn't have to, and I see my job as trying to help students with the same opportunities. So hopefully that answered your question. I have kind of a weird roundabout way, but hey.
No, it was great. So when did you know you were kind of ready to step out of the classroom? It sounded like you almost knew that even as a teacher. You knew that that wasn't the end game.
You might want to say that one again. I got like part of that.
No problem. So when did you know that you were ready to step out of the classroom? It sounds like that may not
gotcha.
Have
been,
yeah.
Gotcha. Two things. One, I think, was my age. It was almost like an epiphany moment. I finished my degree for administration at 29, and people said, do you want to do it? And I was like, I don't know. I'm not really ready to leave the classroom. And honestly, when I woke up on my 30th birthday, looked at my wife and said, I'm ready. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's because I felt like as a someone with a 2 in front of my age, people would look at me differently and not let me be the leader I thought I could be or would hold it against me. So I guess there was a little bit of that piece. What really made me feel ready, though, was having a lot of people telling you you're ready. There's that piece of us that says, I know I'm ready, but really you can think you're ready all you want. When other people recognize it's your time and you've got something to offer at a bigger level, I had a lot of people who started that I trusted to start saying that kind of stuff, and so it really gave me the comfort zone. I don't think I've ever been ready to leave a classroom, in all honesty. I think if you're an administrator and you're, quote, ready to leave the classroom, you probably shouldn't be around education much longer. It's just how you're in the classroom. I love the fact I have a school where I'm able to walk into a room because I'm not in the office dealing with discipline all day long. I have the ability to get out to a classroom, interact with teachers, students, ask questions, engage and be a part of their learning. So for me, I still don't feel like I've left it. I just feel like I get to see a lot more of them. I feel like I've gone from teaching one room to teaching 40 rooms in a day. But there's that little piece that's still inside of me at times still kind of hits back to, you know, I miss the interaction with kids, so I find a way to do that in a different way.
So, Jared, when did you begin to get connected on social media?
I heard social media. That was about it.
And what I'll do, Jared, too, is I'll open up the chat on the side and type it in, too. But when did you begin to get connected on social media?
I got connected probably around 2012. Hey, that's going to help me a lot more. Thanks. I wasn't really too heavy on the social media piece when I first started. And one thing that really bothered me when I first became an administrator in 2011 was that I didn't have a lot of people to learn from. So I found myself as one of 18 high school assistant principals in a district of 8 high schools. And, yeah, you could reach out to them, but I had one colleague next door, and that was it. Everyone else was a phone call or email away, but it was still, there wasn't a lot to learn from or someone who I had instantaneous feedback. And to be honest, when you're in a district, I mean, you're so insular that the answers you get a lot of times aren't varied. It's just like getting the yes man approach. So I was trying to find a way to grow professionally and get other feedback. And I started doing a lot of reading of blogs and other things online, and I noticed Eric Scheniger throwing Twitter around left and right. And for me, Eric was kind of like, I call him the godfather of Twitter. Not that he was the first or the originator, but, you know, he's led a lot of us down that path because as administrators, we were all told social media is bad. Social media is the negative. Social media is the thing where kids come with problems. And Eric was one of those who had said the same thing and then said, no, here's my transition. And I think the transition he showed gave me the confidence to get on. And so I got on in 2012. In all sincerity, I was kicked off. My district asked me to kill my account because there were some issues with, at the time, we didn't have a real clear policy, and so there was a boundary issue, and I understand that. So after they had the policy in place, I went back online, and I haven't looked back since. I mean, the connections I've made online have made my school better for our students. They've made things better for our teachers. It's great having resources to reach out to me, reaching out to you, Todd, when we had flipped classrooms, and I had no clue what to tell our teachers. Here's someone that's done it. Being able to bring in Dave Burgess to talk to our book study group. I have a hard time imagining where I'd be without the people I've met online and the things that's the cool part. They're willing to share. I mean, and as I said, I was at an ASSP in San Diego a week ago, and we were talking about social media and professional learning. And my sales pitch is always the same. In any other industry, we wouldn't stand up in front of people and share what we do to make ourselves better because we're competing. And in education, we have absolutely no problem sharing our best practices because we're not proprietary, because we're trying to make each other better because it's what's right. And so for me, social media is like the ultimate playground. It's a level playing field where everybody can share their ideas and there's no hierarchy of I'm here, you're here. It's everybody's an equal educator. So for me, you know, I got connected then, and I think that's why I try to preach connection so much now.
So that led up to the MD Ed chat and your principal chat, your assistant principal chat, excuse me. How did that all kind of come about? And talk about those two chats.
Maryland Ed chat came from an organic conversation with Jimmy Cassis. What a shock, Jimmy, in an organic conversation. but Jimmy, I was at my first NASSP conference in Washington, D.C., I guess, in 2013. And I was walking around, and I was just hanging around in the morning. They had a tutorial set up on Friday morning for new people on Twitter to come learn how to use it with Brad Curry and Jimmy and a couple others. And Jimmy and I had been tweeting back and forth a lot on Iowa EdChat and some other places. And Jimmy's like, just calm down. I'm sitting in the back. And over the course of the next 2 days with all the food that Jimmy took us to go find, there were a lot of conversations with people around the table doing state ed chats. And they said, you know, why doesn't Maryland have one? Well, good point. We don't. So from that conversation, Katrina Stevens and I came up with, let's just launch a Maryland ed chat. We put a month's worth of work into getting it really set up. And we launched Maryland ed chat. Katrina moved on because she's now into a much bigger role with EdSurge. But we've really, you know, we've tried to keep it going. We've started to really grow in the state. There weren't a lot of people in Maryland connected, and there still aren't to some degree. So we've really worked hard to try to grow that in the last month, especially with Maryland, EdCamp Maryland at the State Department. AP chat was another organic one. We were actually at the AP of the Year Forum. Every year NASSP has all the AP of the Year winners into D.C., and they do lobbying. They do a huge professional learning event. And I was asked to help with Twitter down there to help people get connected. And the week before, we decided to do an AP chat to just get people connected ahead of time. And afterwards, there were a couple of us who said, wouldn't this be cool if we continued it? So Courtney Voschel, who is the National AP of the Year from 2014, and Lisa Rettler, who's Wisconsin's AP of the Year, and I got together with Bob Ferrace from NASSP and launched AP chat later on that year. We had our first live version last week in San Diego, which was entertaining. But it is, both of them are, I think, the way most social media has really come about. It was all organic. There was no planning, no kind of contrived behind the scenes, let's try to sell a product or an idea. It was just people saying there's voices that need to hear each other and voices need to connect, and we found avenues to make them happen.
Well, I also love that you're big on providing learning opportunities for your staff. Why is it important, do you think, for you to be teaching or training adults as well?
Without saying the cliched line, I'll do it anyway. When we hire a teacher, you know, they're getting a 30-year commitment a lot of times. And 30 years at 100 students a year is a lot of lives they're impacting. And that's the minimum. So I feel like when we hire them, we have a really important duty to not only hire the best people, we have an even stronger duty to make sure we keep them growing. And so for me, I think, you know, if you focus on learning for adults, improving the adult learners in the building not only makes them stronger in the classroom, but for me, the real key is modeling. We're trying to model professional learning in a way that it's not even professional learning, it's just learning, in hopes that our teachers start to walk away with the concepts that they can take back to the classroom. So using social media to move some of our professional learning, or using Sophia. I'm so glad I found Sophia. I mean, it's so easy to make a professional learning site and also a course there for our teachers, but they're creating their own content. They're going back to the classroom from what they saw us use with them and now applying it to students. Right. And so for me, building that adult capacity is really what's growing the student capacity and the learning in the entire school. It's really building a culture.
Chris, I can't hear you.
Sorry about that. So you were named the Maryland Assistant Principal of the Year in 2014. What did you learn kind of from that process?
It was a really great opportunity to reflect. It's really humbling to be named the AP of the Year. I'm really proud to say our district just had the Principal of the Year named this week for high school. We had the high school Principal of the Year 3 years ago. And, you know, we're one of the smaller districts in the state, so we are really proud that we have people winning those awards. And I think what's cool about it is the process allowed me to reflect back on my own leadership. The packet makes you look at data, which is important. I think sometimes in administration we tend to forget the data side. We get so hammered with it that when we have to really reflect, we look at the things we're specifically looking for. And for me, having to sit with student data over 4 years and say, have we really closed the gap? In a school that I'm in where we have very, very small subgroups, sometimes they get lost in the shuffle of data, and in this case, you couldn't do that. You really had to focus down and say, are we serving each and every student? And so for me, what I learned from the process was the importance of really self-reflecting. You know, that award happened. I could say yay, put it on the wall and move on, or I can keep reflecting in the same type of process annually. I think that's where I've decided to land. This year I did the same thing. I went through not the application process, but the same type of idea of the data analysis and looking at our programs, because I think it's one thing to put it in place, the fidelity matters. And so for me, the reflection now and that process taught me it's important that there's fidelity. You know, they list all the things you do when you get that award, but when you leave your building, how many of those things still exist? And I would love to go back and look at the number of people who win something, and then you go back and say, well, that program didn't live. I don't want that to happen. When I leave the building I'm in, I want to see the programs we know are working for teachers and for kids in our community still there. And so the reflection piece of it has become really, really critical to making sure the programs have that Fidelis atmosphere.
What's something you're reading right now, either education books or otherwise?
Let's see. I just finished reading Michael Fullan's The Principal. He was one of our keynoters or thought leaders at our open of the NASSP conference, where he looks at three different avenues in terms of change leadership for the principalship. I currently have What Connected Educators Do Differently by Jimmy Casas, Todd Whitaker, and Jeff Zoll on the way. I'm really big right now. I think when I'm looking at things that I personally am growing from, I think the biggest thing for me has been the Corwin Connected Educator series. One, it's nice to see a lot of the people's voices that I see in 140 characters and a lot more in 140 characters. They've got a lot more to offer than one tweet, and often we see that group as the tweeters and we don't see the extension. So seeing the Corwin Connected Educator series has been nice, and there's also some things coming out in there with people who I didn't know they were doing it. They are experts in things that they don't share it because they're talking about other things online, and they're such a talented group. What I've really found intriguing by it is it gives me really quick ways to give our staff things to reflect on. Some of those larger books tend to be, you know, those real drawn out, one topic, really heavy, and it's hard to find that one thing that's five pages you can share with the staff member and say, this is going to make you better tomorrow. And the Connected Educator series has a lot of those snippets in it with those case studies to be able to say, here's the thing that's going to help you grow. Here's something to think about. Here's someone to connect to. So for me, that's big. Also been very fortunate recently to do some manuscript reviews for some education outlets. So I've got to read some stuff that'll be coming out really soon. And it's nice to be able to sit back and read stuff that's supposed to be the cutting edge, or at least see where people are going. So, you know, when they come out, they're almost 6 to 8 months behind when they were written. So it's nice to see them now when this is like, this is the idea I have and what they're sharing. You can see the real context to it rather than trying to imagine it a year from now. So, you know, the Corwin Connected Educator, if I had to say one book series or one book that's really pushing now, the Connected Educator series, I think, is probably one of the best professional learning tools we've had come out in print in a while for education.
So, Jared, when you're having one of those really rough days, what do you do to kind of recenter yourself and bring it all back to where you need to focus?
Administrators never have rough days, ever. It's hard to say. We actually had one this week. We've had a couple. We've had some threats written on our walls this week in the school, so that's kind of hard when you have to lock your building down and deal with that issue. To be honest, what I did immediately after we got out of that situation, I guess is what I do, I walked out into classrooms. I think for me, when I'm having that day that hurts, you know, whether it's someone in the office is mad, the parents written the nasty email about something about you that you're not sure exists, whatever that reasoning is, to be able to walk out and watch the joy of kids learning is the part that reminds me why I'm doing what I'm doing. I think that's why I get out into the room, because no matter what, it's not about me. It's not about the angry person. It's not about the issue. It's about those kids and those teachers working together to collaborate and learn. And so getting out into that classroom and seeing that in action reminds me why we're there, and it really helps to bring me back from the points where sometimes you want to slam your door or you want to hit that email you know you shouldn't send. It's just, I think that's the answer to most of it for us in education. Get out and see why we do what we do. And that, to me, is the way I have to recenter back.
What's been one of the biggest things you've learned in the last year?
Biggest thing I've learned in the last year, besides I talk too much. I think the biggest thing I've had to learn personally is getting out of the way. And it goes back to that fidelity idea. You know, we've got some really cool programs in our building, from flipped classrooms to the open courseware program to professional learning to the makerspace. We've got all these great things in our building in the last 2 to 3 years. And nothing hurts more than when someone looks at me and says, well, your program, dot, dot, dot. It's not my program. It's the school's program. It's actually the teacher's program. And so it's been very enlightening for me this year to sit back and someone asked me point blank, what are you going to do when you leave? Don't you want this to continue? Yeah, I do. So I've really focused and learned it's important for me to be there as a resource, but not be there as the resource. And I think that's where we sometimes make the mistake, is that we try to be the answer to our teachers or to our students. We're not the answer. We're just there as another voice in the conversation. And so stepping back and really letting the teachers and the students take the lead and really trying to empower them to be the ones to move that change forward, because when I leave, they're still going to be there. When I leave the program, I still want to be there. I need them to be the leaders. It's about them anyway. You know, one of the books I didn't mention, although it just popped in my head, is The Rules of the Red Rubber Ball by Kevin Carroll. And we're actually doing the Red Rubber Ball Challenge with our staff right now, where they're sharing their passion statement. And my passion statement was really simple to me. It was, my passion is building schools for them, by them. I want a school where the students, the teachers, and the community build the school. I'm there to help them do it. And so for me, I think that's what I've really learned this year, is the need to step back, not be the person in the front of the initiative, but rather be that guy in the back who, when they need it, I can step forward if they need the defense. But if they don't need me, stand back, because there's nothing cooler than watching a teacher or a student shine in a leadership role.
What do you see as one of the biggest challenges in your job?
The biggest challenge in the job is trying to remember that everybody can't be right all the time and that everyone can't be happy. You know, Todd, you sit in that role. You know, you have teachers, I'm sure, that sometimes disagree with what you do. And it's really easy. And in our schools, people don't leave our staff. And so they become very close. And there's a lot of hyperbole sometimes about everybody's mad about dot, dot, dot. And it's, for me, the challenge is remembering that there's a bigger picture. It's remembering that I can't make everyone smile at the end of the day. I have to do what's right for the largest group, and that's the people in the building. And sometimes that means making a decision that makes someone very unhappy. This is the time of year we look at staffing. There is nothing worse than looking at staff cuts and figuring out what position you're going to eliminate because there's a person on the other end. Mm-hmm. But we have to do what's right by our students and by our school. And so for me, the biggest challenge is really finding that balance where you have people realizing that you're trying to work with them, but you also still have enough of the rope that you're not giving them complete control. Because there are some decisions that it's not fair to entrust them with, and not that they can't do it. When you're looking at staffing, it's not fair to look at a department chair and say, tell me which of your teachers goes away. That's not their gig. That's not why they signed up. That's my job. And so it's really knowing that balancing piece. And I think, to me, that's really the biggest challenge. If I had to give you one other challenge, I think part of it is sometimes remembering what it's like to be in a classroom. And I think that's why I get out in it, is that, you know, I still feel like I know what a classroom's like, but to teachers, I'm not in their room, and so they say, you're not there anymore, you don't get it. And I have to remember, they're not wrong. I'm not in there every single day dealing with the policies they deal with. I'm seeing it from the other side. So trying to remember what it's like to stand in front of 30 students every 88 minutes with all their issues that come in is another challenge I think we face quite often.
What about if you could go back and see yourself as a first-year teacher, what advice would you give to yourself?
You don't have to be the answer. That would be the first thing I tell myself. And it's, you know, there's that awful line that they always tell new teachers of, don't smile until Christmas. And it's the worst thing you can do. You have to be yourself. And for me, myself wasn't having all the answers, but I felt like there was this teacher that had to get up there, tell every time a kid had a question, you had to be the source. And I think it was more about, you don't have to be the answer. You're the one who can empower them to find the answer. If a student says, what's this? You have the ability to say, I don't know, but I'm coming back to you in 2 minutes. We have a BYOD school. So it's real simple. Go to your device, look it up, and come back in 2 minutes, and you're going to share with the class. And before they share it, make sure if they get it wrong, you have a good research conversation now about research quickly. But I think it's knowing I'm not the answer and knowing that it's okay to be who you want to be. And I think sometimes you see young teachers get up in front of a room and just try to be the person that either they want to emulate. This was my teacher I loved, I want to be them, or they try to be the teacher they've been told they have to be, and it's not, kids see through authenticity right away. They want an authentic individual, and they deserve it. So to me, I think those are the two biggest things. You're not the answer, and be yourself.
So, Jared, the one question that we always like to end on when we do these is, what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
If I had to say what my biggest passion is right now, it really is that statement I gave about building schools for them by them. I think we've made an awesome transition in the building I'm in from a building where they would look at us in admin or in instructional leadership team meetings, look at the administration, say what's the answer, and expect us to tell them the direction. And we've moved it towards a building where they feel empowered to make decisions and feel empowered to make choices and feel empowered to bring ideas to us. And so for me, my real passion right now is continuing to find ways to empower everyone. You know, I'm very proud of our RSVP program. It's awesome to have a group of students who are improving the school. Rather than us tell them how to fix their problems, they're fixing them. They're empowered to do it. Having teachers lead professional learning, having parents involved in our processes, you know, there's just, to me, that's my passion. I want a school where the people that are a part of it don't feel like they're being told what to do, but they feel like they have a serious voice in making it the best place it can be. We're there in the end to serve them. We're there, I'm a firm believer in servant leadership. We serve our school and our community, and for me, I think that's where that passion lays, is trying to get them to be the people who want to come in and fix the problems, to have those open conversations. And sometimes that's hard, because open conversations and honest conversations sometimes say things we don't like. But the reality is what makes us better. And as a leader, that's my job, is to hear everyone's opinion and try to balance it out. So my real passion right now is trying to build that empowered school.
Jared, thanks so much for spending some time with us. How can listeners connect with you?
Apparently not through Google Hangout, because all I hear are choppiness. They can connect up. I'm on Twitter at JC Wassler, WASTLER. I'm also on Voxer. Voxer is my new favorite tool, just because I like hearing the little walkie-talkie doo-doo-doot sound. But I'm on Voxer. I'm JC Wassler as well. They can find me on my website. JaredWassler.com has all the ways to connect up, and it has resources. If they're interested on that site, there's a lot of stuff there in terms of programs we're doing in our school. There's links to everything we've done, all the presentations we give about our programs, and anything we can share, we've tried to kind of link it up through there. I'm going to give them one other place to go. If they go to lhsconnect.weebly.com, that is the connection portal for our school. That has links to all the program pages for all the stuff we've been putting in place, from RSVP to professional learning to our technology initiatives. So anything they want to see about the school is right there for them to look at. If they have any questions or any resources they need in addition, we have them hanging out in places sometimes hard to find, but they're there somewhere. But just let me know on Twitter or Voxer, and I'll try my best to get back to it.
Awesome. You can connect with us at EduAllStarsHQ on Twitter. You can find our website at EduAllStars.com, and then you can also find us on iTunes by searching out EduAllStars with no spaces.
And join us for our next episode as we interview Terry Eicholtz. So thanks again, Jared, for coming on. We really appreciate you giving up some of your time.
All good. I'm glad it sounds good on your end.